Nebraska welcomed in Wisconsin this past weekend and was run over at home behind a powerful Badgers ground game. Can the Huskers rebound in time to face another top 10 team at home this week? We'll break down last Saturday's game as well as look ahead to that matchup with Ohio State. Our special guest, former Husker Adam Carriker. Sean Callahan will also give us the full rundown from a busy recruiting weekend. All that and more coming up next on NET's Big Red Wrap-Up. Hi, everybody. I'm Kevin Kugler, and welcome to NET's Big Red Wrap-Up. Boy, Memorial Stadium on Saturday night was something, wasn't it? The crowd was rocking. The 97 national champs were there. And with about 10 minutes to go in the third quarter, Huskers tie it up with an interception return for a touchdown. And you start thinking, maybe, just maybe. And then Wisconsin Nebraska'd Nebraska and ran him out of the building. With me tonight, former Husker Blake Lawrence and Sean Callahan. And Blake, we've seen a lot of things over the years. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of different ways for Nebraska to lose games. That was certainly one that we used to see a lot of in that building from Nebraska, but it was Wisconsin who came in and just established the line of scrimmage and dominated.
Yeah, it was one of those opportunities. Actually, as a former player, you get to go on the sideline one game a year, and I was excited to be on the sidelines for this game and see Wisconsin face-to-face, see what type of talent they put on the field. And I was proud of Nebraska and the way in which they finished that first half. I mean, I went into halftime thinking, we can fight and we can beat these guys. And then Wisconsin came out and they were ripping and roaring and ready to go in the second half. And they just were physical and they played a really good game mentally. They just did the right things. And you could see some of it wear down on the Nebraska sidelines. And Tough loss for a lot of people, especially being so close to the players, knowing that they just couldn't stop Wisconsin once it got going.
And Sean, you and I grew up in this state and have watched a lot of football over the years in that building, and it's somewhat demoralizing when it happens to you as a team after you, for so many years, prided yourself on being able to do just exactly that.
I mean, yeah, we've seen Nebraska get beat in Memorial Stadium, and there's been some bad games, but I don't recall one where you knew exactly what the opponent was going to be doing of those final 34 plays, and you still couldn't stop it. And Wisconsin ran the ball 32 out of 34. They had two third down passes to Cephas, one over the middle. And you could argue there was a misholding call on Luke Gifford. He was coming in, they stopped him. That was a huge play, though, because it was 17-17, and they threw a touchdown pass. But Nebraska, I don't know what it is. I mean, it felt like they couldn't set the edge. They didn't have containment with the linebackers. Guys were just making bad reads, bad assignments. And Bob Diaco said that today after practice. He felt like they weren't necessarily being overpowered as much more as guys were just doing the wrong thing.
I think there's some moments. We're going to do that in the huddle. We're going to take a look at some plays, and you'll see that there's some moments where there's some individuals for Wisconsin that just are, they're strong guys. Not saying we don't have strong guys, but there's moments where certain things happen. They're in position. They play it right. They're super simple with the way they run, and because of that, they're very confident, and they can bring a lot of power. And there are some, so there's some overpowering in certain plays, but also missed assignments. And the missed assignments are the things that Coach Diaco has to go back and teach the team and the players and understand, like, we beat ourselves at moments, and you have to slow down the film to see that, because in general, it looks like a butt kicking. But sometimes you're like, man, Nebraska beat themselves.
Well, we know you have lots of questions and comments regarding this game and, of course, the matchup with Ohio State coming up this weekend. So start getting a hold of us. The guys from Phi Kappa Theta are with us tonight, standing by to take your calls. They're enjoying some Valentino's pizza. Our NET Sports intern, Ron, lurking about to keep the room on task. So let's put those guys to work. Email or text us, bigred@netnebraska.org, or you can reach us on social media. Our eyes are peeled on both Facebook and Twitter tonight for your comments and questions. Last week, we asked you, has Nebraska's defense improved, or has it been because of struggling opponents? 42% of you said a little of A and B, 27% said improved, 25% said, can we revisit after the Wisconsin game, and 6% of you said it was because of the opponents. Here's this week's all-new sideline survey. After six games, which unit needs the most improvement? Offense, defense, special teams, or if you think all of them need improvement? So far, 72% of you say everything on this team needs to be better. Head to our website now and cast your vote in our sideline survey. One thing Bob Diaco was very concerned about before this game, and he told us when we met with him prior to the game on Friday, that if he were coaching against Nebraska, he'd try to do the same thing, and that's getting the run game isolated against Nebraska's defensive backs. And he was very concerned about that ability of Wisconsin to do that. And it looked like Wisconsin was able to do that for a good portion of the second half of that game.
And really, it was just simple fundamentals. Guys like Lamar Jackson, Eric Lee, Kalu was rusty, Chris Jones rusty, Antonio Reed's been battling injuries, Aaron Williams is injured too. I mean, just all those things together, it just did not look pretty with those guys at times. And people are going to continue to go at that back end of Nebraska's defense, because that really probably is the question mark right now. The front seven has proven that they can be effective, but those corners and safeties in space have had their problems this year.
Yeah, and I would say that it's fun if you do look at it. When teams are bunching a lot of their tight ends, receivers on one side of the line of scrimmage, or they're all over here, they're trying to get all the linebackers over there, and then they're going to run right back at the one safety that's on the backside by himself. Yep. And you'll see it time and time again. Wisconsin did that. They repeated it. And there becomes a blueprint at times when you have a coach on the defensive side that is consistent in the way that he adjusts to certain formations. You give the other team a blueprint on how to isolate individuals. And that can happen. It can happen. And you can see Wisconsin did that at times with Lamar Jackson. As you mentioned, there's some plays with Aaron Williams. Kalu actually does a good job of getting in position. But that's one of the challenges when you've got a very deep theoretical coach in terms of how he plays the game, is that there you can hand over the keys and say, if you get them in this spot, you could have the advantage. And it looked like Wisconsin figured all that out.
Outside linebackers, too, I feel like get sucked in sometimes and then they lose the edge. And that's when those big runs tend to happen, when those guys get kind of brought in.
Yeah, these guys get flip-flopped sometimes, and you're switching gaps and you're trying to figure out who's in what place. And because of that three linemen up front, these offensive linemen can double team easily. You can go out and kick out and get two guys on a defensive end, and you can move them wherever you want. It does leave the linebackers to roam free, but they have to be consistent about where they're playing and disciplined in their assignment.
Let me throw a positive out there. And I know it's sometimes hard coming off a loss to find a lot of positives, but let me throw the play of Tanner Lee out there as a, for the most part, positive development over the last couple of weeks for Nebraska. And I thought his best game was at Illinois. I thought this was probably his second best game of the season, even though he threw another pick six, and I have a hard time putting that on him. The throw was not quite on the mark, but that's still one you got to pull in on third and two, and it turns into a ricochet off the helmet of Divine Ozigbo and goes the other way for Chris Orr, taking it all the way 78 yards for a touchdown. How would you assess what Tanner Lee was able to do for the most part in a tough performance for this team as a whole?
Well, he was hit eight times, as we learned from Danny Langsdorf yesterday, not sacked. I thought that was a good number to hang your hat on for Nebraska's line, but Wisconsin, on the other end, did not blitz a lot in that game. They brought routinely three or four and dropped seven or even eight in coverage on a lot or most of the downs. So Nebraska's blocking was six or seven against four. So they gave Tanner Lee adequate time, and he made the right throws. And, I mean, the Stanley Morgan throw and some of the throws that he made to J.D. Spielman, those were big-time plays. And Wisconsin almost wanted him to make those throws, and he proved that he can make them. And I thought that was a positive on Saturday to walk away with.
Yeah, I think there was moments when you saw Tanner. There's a couple deep throws where it was a great play by the defense, but he's making the right reads. But there's a lot of pressure on the quarterback when he does get that much time, because I know that sounds counterintuitive, but that means that there's a lot of defenders out there that are going to try and disrupt those routes, and he's got to do a good job of reading and making the right decisions on where he throws the ball, and I'll give it to him. I think the challenge is that was really out of his control on the interception, and that was a huge, huge momentum swing, because, man, Nebraska was humming.
Marching right down the field.
They were. And that were a couple big momentum killers in that game, one by the offense and the pick six, and then again right before halftime giving up that long run to Jonathan Taylor after Nebraska had that long play of their own with Morgan. So there were some momentum plays that really shifted it, but then Nebraska got it right back after halftime. So I don't know how you were feeling looking at that. Was there a moment where you said, I think Nebraska's got this thing?
Well, Aaron Williams' interception at 17 all, and then they fumble the kickoff and have the ball, I believe, on the 9 to start their next possession. At that point, you're like, Nebraska's in this. And that was that third down to Sefkis over the middle. If Nebraska gets Wisconsin off the field and gets the ball back with a chance to take the lead, that was the moment to flip the game. And they were not able to get Wisconsin off the field, and then they weren't able to get them off the field the rest of the night after that.
Now, when you're watching this, Kev, do you ever look and feel that way where it's would momentum have changed the outcome of this game?
I think here's what I think. There were two huge momentum plays, the one Sean talked about and the pick six, that I think for teams, especially teams that struggle at times, and Nebraska's had its struggles this year and over the course of the last several years, But when teams find something good go their way, I really do think, especially at the college level, you can see that build on itself. Maybe not as much at the next level because you're dealing with guys who've been through everything in their pros. Mm-hmm. But I really do think the college game is a lot about emotion. Mm-hmm. That's why coaching can have such a huge impact at the college game, is because so many of these guys play with so much emotion that ranges back and mm-hmm. forth. I really do think if Nebraska scores on that opening drive, gets Wisconsin off the field on that third down play, I think you got a shot. I'm not saying it's going to happen because I still think Wisconsin is physically superior at this point in their program to where Nebraska is. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that you can't say that it wouldn't have gone the other way had Nebraska not been able to make a play when it counted.
Well, and their playbook would have changed too. They wouldn't sure. have been able to run. They would have had to throw more. And that was their liability. If you got Hornibrook into throwing situations, that was where he struggled and made some mistakes, and Nebraska was able to capitalize on one there. And I think that's all. That one little play there was big when you kind of look at it in the big picture, obviously, and then it just flipped the momentum at that point.
Well, let's take a look at the highlights from this one, and we can kind of point out some of the stuff that we've been talking about in this segment. If you missed it, it was a great atmosphere on Saturday night. I mean, Grant Wistrom leading the team prayer. Everything was just rocking. And then Nebraska was rocking right out of the gates. Divino Zigbo showing that they could move the ball on Wisconsin on the ground. Tanner Lee standing in the pocket, finds DeMornay Pearsonell, makes a nice catch on the sideline all the way down to the 25-yard line. One of the two big momentum plays in this game right here. Looked initially like maybe it had even been tipped. It was not, obviously, and it was off the helmet of Divino Zigbo. And then Chris Orr, who had an ACL rupture last year and all the way back in this year and all the way back in for a touchdown, completely changed the game. And you see it in the fans. I mean, it was that kind of feeling from an electric start to a Wisconsin lead. And the Badgers come back to work again. One of the areas in which Wisconsin has really improved this year is at wide receiver. They've got more speed, more talent there. Quintez Cephas, really talented player. And, of course, Jonathan Taylor. You're going to see the two best freshman running backs maybe in the country over these last 2 weeks and next week as well with J.K. Dobbins. But Taylor, 30 yards. Rafael Gaglianone with the field goal from 37 in Wisconsin with a 10-0 lead. Huskers, though, able to start chipping away again. The confidence on offense was evident even in the second quarter. Nebraska still down 10-0, but Tanner Lee, I liked what they did moving him out of the pocket a little bit on Saturday night, throwing on the run down to the 44-yard line. Lee able to evade and then throws a dart to Spielman, fast becoming one of the more reliable guys.
Face mask.
That Nebraska has missed that face mask, the contact there, and then the dart to Spielman to the 14-yard line. This was another big momentum play, though. Nebraska goes down, 33-yard field goal, a chance to get on the board. And no, from 33, 12-play, 52-yard drive for nothing. Huskers come right back, though. Waning moments. First half, Stanley Morgan down the sideline.
That's a great example of Tanner Lee had to throw that over so many defenders that were just standing there right in front of him, begging him to throw it. He waited. He was patient. It was a great throw. Great
and the
catch.
Block by Lindsey there was huge.
Another huge play, though. I don't know if anybody in the conference answers better than Wisconsin. 75 yards, one missed tackle, two missed opportunities. Can't let Jonathan Taylor have that kind of opportunity.
No, you can. There's a missed assignment on this play. We'll take a look at it in the huddle.
17-7. And Wisconsin just pops the balloon that was Memorial Stadium. Riding high after that 80-yard touchdown pass, nothing. So Huskers coming back, trying to get downfield. Divino Zigbo, 28 yards to the 46-yard line. Nebraska kind of bumbled around towards the end of this drive. They were fortunate that Divino Zigbo slipped on the sideline, got out of bounds, allowed them to kick that field goal. 17-10, Wisconsin's lead is 7. Wisconsin's lead is 0. Williams, the interception, great anticipation, and the touchdown ties the game at 17. And you're thinking, all right, we got a game in Lincoln, Nebraska on a Saturday night. And then Wisconsin said, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to wear you out. 15 yards to the 29-yard line. This is 3rd and 4 at the 45, the play Sean was talking about a moment ago. Quintez Cephas, 31 yards to the Nebraska 24. Just an absolute gut punch to the Huskers. Capped the 10-play, 93-yard drive on 3rd and goal with a 5-yard touchdown pass to Quintez Cephas, 24-17. And Wisconsin just suffocates Nebraska the rest of the way. Suffocates him with a run. 21-yard rush to the 44-yard line. And nothing going on there. Ibrahim, transfer who's come in and seen some spot minutes. Nice little 24-yard run to the 15-yard line.
Is this safe for young children to watch right now?
Boy, I mean, it's just, it's angry football. Shaw, 1-yard run, 10 plays, 80 yards. You got to imagine guys like Adam Carricker will join us in a little bit. We're about ready to run out in the field and just try to tackle somebody because wasn't happening. Stanley Morgan coughs this one up. Huge turnovers, Nebraska.
That was the nail in the coffin.
Oh, that's it. And it was, I mean, excellent camera work by the crew we had there on Saturday night to show that one getting ripped out. Stanley Morgan coughs it up and gives Wisconsin a chance to come right back and lean and lean and lean some more. Ibrahim, 9-yard carry down to the 1-yard line. And after that, Shaw caps a 10-play time-eating drive with a 1-yard touchdown run. 38-17, Wisconsin gets the win. Wisconsin still unbeaten. And Wisconsin doing what they've done since Barry Alvarez got there and essentially brought the blueprint from Bob Devaney. They ran the football, they pounded the Huskers, and Mike Riley's team goes out with a loss. Mike Riley's squad has not been very good over the years when they get outrushed, and they got outrushed in a big way in this one. 353-110, time of possession really mounted in that fourth quarter for Wisconsin, and the points off turnovers, 14 points off turnovers for Wisconsin.
And Nebraska, I believe, put up more yards by far than anyone has on Wisconsin. The problem was nobody expected their defense to struggle like this. I mean, that was the thing going in you felt good about. The way Nebraska's front seven had manned up and played at least the last few weeks, even in the second half at Oregon, that, you know what, they could match up. This is their kind of game. And that's what caught me by surprise the most, Kevin.
Well, it's time to go deeper into the playbook. Blake Lawrence will break some of this down for you in the huddle.
Tonight in the huddle, we're going to take a look at Wisconsin's running game against Nebraska's defense, particularly the long runs by Jonathan Taylor. This is the 3-4 defense under the microscope. You've got an outside linebacker on this play that's supposed to say outside, and you got a defensive end that's supposed to say inside. So he's going to say inside the offensive tackle. This is a play of strength by Wisconsin's left tackle and that left guard. They double team and are able to literally just throw the defensive end outside and get him out of his gap. So take a look at this right here. Freedom gets tossed. You see his momentum going here, and Newby's trying to replace him inside, which is actually a missed assignment there. And by him going inside, defensive lineman going out, there is no one in this gap right here except for Lamar Jackson. So a lot of pressure on the defensive back. Jonathan Taylor's going to stiff arm him, get down the line the field, and that's just early in the game. Here is that dagger in terms of the momentum going back into Wisconsin's favor. Watch the nose tackle here. He's lined up on this side of the center. He's going to stay in the A gap, which is on this side of the center. That's his only assignment on this play. And if he does that, all the gaps are filled. So that is his job on this play. And he just doesn't get there. It's not necessarily not knowing his assignment, but it's a great job by the offensive line for Wisconsin, particularly the center, and shielding him, and that opens up a gap and a seam. There's just no one there the way that this play is drawn up on defense, and that is going to turn into a long touchdown run and a lot of energy going out of Memorial Stadium at that moment. This play, this is later in the game in the fourth quarter, second and eight. You've got the offense line blocking down. You got the tight end coming this way. And watch this. This is on the safety here. You got Aaron Williams, who played a great game on Saturday, but his eyes are on this tight end. As he goes across the line of scrimmage to make this block, he's got to track him across, and he's got to stay inside of him. When the tight end makes contact with the defensive end, he's got to stay inside of him. Here's the contact, and here's Aaron Williams. Here's the gap. His momentum takes him outside the play. He loses track of where that tight end is, and this is where Aaron Williams is supposed to be, tracking that tight end across. It just opens up a seam, and Taylor's going to find that seam and make it pay. It happened a couple different ways on Saturday, but it was challenging to see Nebraska's defense get outpowered. They got pushed around. They also just missed some assignments, and that's tough to see for a team that looked so good against the run all year.
Well, and one thing Wisconsin's going to do to you, and you know that, is they're going to find that weak spot, and they're just going to keep chipping away and chipping away like a chisel on stone, and eventually that crack is going to widen. And it widened in the fourth quarter on Nebraska, and the whole thing fell apart.
Yeah, I think there's times when, especially when the Nebraska gets down, some of these guys, you get so much energy, you're trying to make that play. You see Aaron Williams did have a great game, and he's just trying to fly everywhere and get there, and then you're like, well, no, I missed my assignment. And that's what Wisconsin can do for you. They're not going to trick you. They're going to keep going and going and going and just hope you make a mistake.
Yeah, it's a tough task indeed when you face the Badgers, and another tough task coming up this weekend with Ohio State. But coming up next, we'll be joined by former Husker Adam Carriker. But before we go to break, let's look back at the sights inside Memorial Stadium on Saturday, courtesy Aaron Babcock at Hale Varsity Magazine. Stay with us. We're back soon.
This team hasn't changed much from the beginning. Of how they've come to work every day. So, you know, it's definitely something you have to keep an eye on at this stage of the year. What is a disappointing loss and another great opponent following right away.
Every week is kind of a, I guess, a fresh start. You know, it's frustrating that we're in the position we're at, and you know, I'm sure all you guys know that we're frustrated with some of the things that have happened, but, you know, our season's not over yet. We've got plenty of football left to play, and it's kind of a thing we have to take week by week.
We have to put it behind us. There's really no other option. So we'll focus on that, especially as leaders and captains. You know, it's our job to steer the ship and make sure everyone's doing the right things and continuing to work hard and bringing a focus and a motivation this week to get a big win.
You got like the New Orleans Pelicans sweatshirt Tanner was wearing. Welcome back to NET's Big Red Wrap-Up. I'm here with Blake Lawrence to get an update on what's been happening on social media. Blake, you are the one who updates us, so update away.
I am. Well, there were a lot of happy moments on social media early in the game, like Center Sass handing out runzas.
Well, I think he was selling them.
It wasn't handing them out. Okay,
let's not go crazy here. Runs is a business. Okay,
everyone would track who he's given runs to for free. So he made everyone pay.
Yes.
All right, that's what senators do. Runs, enjoyed meeting your newest employee yesterday. That's Jeremiah Severs. Thanks, Jeremiah. That's a good photo. Next one here. Ooh, this is what we all felt like. Mm. Okay, so this is Nick Starling TV. Oh, my Huskers. Just crying yourself to sleep in the night game. We're usually pretty good at night.
Yeah. Not so much on Saturday.
So if we've got another one here, this is maybe next week's game will be easier.
Oh, and then he looked and saw.
And then he looks at the score, 62-14. Now this one is from my guy, Terry Oswald on Facebook. I feel you, Terry, I feel you.
Okay, so you're branching out now, Twitter and Facebook.
Twitter and social media update. Yeah. I'm going to try MySpace next.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good luck finding something on there. Thank you, Blake. That's very exciting. We are excited to have one more thing to show you, though, from the world of social media. And that is this little video of one Blake F. Lawrence, who is shooting Der Schlinger. You know, I noticed this in the middle of the game, that Der Schlinger was being shot poorly. I didn't notice it was you. You shot it straight up in the air. It landed on some poor cheerleader's head.
That was an upper decker, man.
That was no upper
decker. That went second.
No, it went 4 feet in front of you.
It shot.
We all saw it. It was embarrassing.
You know, that was a proud moment. I've been trying to shoot that thing for a long time. Got a good excuse to do so. I turned around. The game wasn't looking too good, but
the
hot dogs were hot.
Dogs were hot. We're pleased to welcome to the show former Husker Adam Carriker.
Thanks for having me.
You have not ever gotten to shoot their Wiener Schlinger yet, have you?
I was actually in the stands when that happened. There was a lot of people who weren't too pleased with that.
Yes.
Like, where's that hot dog coming from?
Yes, poorly shot.
It didn't make a lot of people happy.
I need to get a redemption.
You need practice. Repetition.
Now that your NFL career is over and you are now doing the Carriker Chronicles for the Omaha World Herald, among other things, which I've watched many times as the people's show. And it's fun to watch. It's a fun and energetic look at Husker football. But what is your energy like about this team after Saturday? Because I got to imagine for a former defensive guy, watching what happened in the second half to Nebraska made your skin crawl a little bit.
honestly, it was a little bit subdued. There's been times in the past you get excited. Like when we got the pick six, I literally jumped in the guy's arms next to me. He's 170. I don't know how I can crush it. And big men don't leave their feet. Let me tell you. That's how excited I was because we had outplayed them to that point. We were finally even. Our mistakes were behind us, you know, and then the fourth quarter was what it was. It was one of those things where I'm a little bit subdued about it because I want to see how they react to Ohio State. 24-point underdog, the way the Wisconsin game went. How do they bounce back?
How hard is it as a defender when you run up against a team, and I don't know if you ever did during your career at college or in the NFL, that runs up against a team that is able to consistently pound you into submission like Wisconsin was able to do, really without a whole lot of diversification as far as their play calls were going. They basically said, here's what we're running. We're going to keep running it. Try and stop it.
They are not complicated.
No.
There are individuals who are sitting next to me who'd never been to a football game before. So they're going to run it, aren't they? Yes, they're going to score, aren't they? I go, well, I hope not, but probably, you know, it kind of looks like it. And it's one of those things where you play teams like when Harbaugh was with the 49ers. It was not complicated. Tackle over, then you bring an extra tackle in the game. You got your biggest tight end. You got five big bodies to the left. Where do you think they're going? He had a lot of success with it, though. It was pound you. It was physical football. And he took a 3-13 team to the NFC title game and then the Super Bowl with it.
So I guess, Adam, from the scheme perspective, we've talked about 3-4 all year. You played in a 3-4 in the pros, right? Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so, and you've talked about it, but what is it just hearing it? And what Wisconsin does, they run a 3-4, and they do pretty well on the defensive
Alabama.
Side. So, yeah, Alabama, you could see these guys having success with it. Was it a 3-4 problem on Saturday? Or was it more than that, beyond just the setup and lineup, more personnel? What would you pin it on?
It's probably a bit of an adjustment. I saw you going through the plays over there, guys out of their gaps, guys not filling their lanes of responsibility, techniques and things of that nature. There's an adjustment process. So when we started putting in the 3-4 with the Redskins, I'd played football for 15 years. We were doing stuff in practice. Not only had I never seen before, literally the opposite of what I'd been taught to do. Had I done it before, I'd have gotten in trouble. Phillip Daniels, a 15-year vet, I go, have you ever seen this? He goes, no, but he never played 3-4 before. It's so different. You're literally stepping laterally instead of penetrating up the field. So it's a lot of technique things as well, and they just won the battle up front too.
Adam, how far away is Nebraska from having the pass rushers to run this defense properly?
So it's interesting, the whole offseason was about the war daddy, the nose guard, who are we going to get? Mick Stoltenberg has stepped in admirably. He put on 15, 20 pounds in the offseason. I kept saying, once we get the nose guard figured out, actually the most important thing is pass rushers, because you have to be able to get after the quarterback. It's great to mix up your blitzes with the 3-4. You have to be able to get after the quarterback without blitzing all the time. With the Redskins, we spent two straight first-round picks on Ryan Kerrigan and Brian Arakpo just so we could do those two things on the outside linebacker position.
A lot of questions coming in. We're going to get to some of those right here that you're posting on Facebook, that you're tweeting at us. Todd says, can we hold Ohio State to at least 50 points?
I would like to think so, yes. I cannot make any guarantees, unfortunately. I was in the locker room, and there's a thing in the locker room that says, remember 62-3. So they have not forgotten that, obviously, from last year. So there's a bit of a rallying cry, a bit of a, hey, let's not let that happen again.
It's an Ohio State team that will come into this game with the best defensive line Nebraska has seen this year, and it's one of the deepest in the country. There's probably 11 guys that factor into that defensive line that would start for Nebraska right now. That's a hard thing to handle for Nebraska's offensive line trying to establish a running game. How do you counter a defensive line that is so deep and talented when you're going up against them?
Yeah, they're very good. You could argue they're the best in the country. But their pass defense at one point during the season was 130th in the country out of 130 teams. Now, Tanner Lee's had his struggles, but at some point, he's going to have to be able to make those plays to help us out. I thought Ozigbo played pretty well on Saturday night. He found holes where sometimes there weren't holes. He's got quick feet for a big guy. So he's going to play well, but Tanner Lee at some point is going to have to make some of those throws as well if we're going to beat some of these teams like Wisconsin or Ohio State.
What did you see from Trey Bryan? I know today was his first full practice back. I mean, did you get a chance to get a good read on Trey today?
It's hard to see a lot out of Trey. I know McHale was getting a lot of reps. I saw Ozigbo. Trey was getting some. There was even some talk maybe he medically redshirts if he doesn't continue to play this year. It's one of those things where he is a really good back, and you want to make sure he's healthy. Obviously, you want to contribute, but you want to make sure he's healthy so you don't do any further damage.
And so, Adam, I think that you see the talk about the second half, Nebraska wearing down, or maybe Wisconsin overpowering. We can call it which way, but have you ever been in those games when you are on the field heck of a lot. I mean, Nebraska had the ball for 2 minutes, less than 2 minutes in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of pressure on the defense. What's it like as a defender when you got to go out there time and time again? You get to see a three and out, you're back on the field. Like, what does that feel like to you?
It can be tough. It can be frustrating. I think Wisconsin had the ball just under 40, and Nebraska had it just over 20 minutes throughout the game. It's almost 2-1. So that's tough, especially when they're playing that physical smash mouth football. As a defense, get them off the field. Get your offense back on the field. Put their defense back on the field. That's the best thing you can do.
Carl in Riverside, California says, many big-time football programs fell out of the national spotlight. Miami, Ohio State, Michigan, USC, Penn State. Within 2 to 3 years, they're back to being relevant again. In your opinion, why is it taking Nebraska, 14 years and counting, so long to be back in the national discussion?
I actually discussed this on my show, an identity. We need an identity. We knew what we were going to do. We all knew what Wisconsin was going to do. It wasn't fancy. Yet it worked. We need an identity. Are we a Pac-12 finesse pass the ball team? Are we a Big Ten team before we were in the Big Ten? Now that we're in the Big Ten, we're a Pac-12 team. But who are we? We have a coach who for 3 decades has thrown the ball, loves skill position players. He comes here, he recognizes what we were, and he tries to honor that by running the ball. But I almost wish he would just do what he wants to do, because it's like he's conflicted. Like, he feels like he's supposed to run the ball, but when it comes down to it, there's muscle memory, there's play calling muscle memory, him and Langsdorf, and he ends up being conflicted between running and passing, in my opinion. We just need an identity.
Matt says, how much fire is left in this team after that fourth quarter?
They'll show us that on Saturday. This is all about pride. You talk about 62-3, you talk about what happened last Saturday, you talk about being a 24-point underdog. It's all about pride this Saturday. They're going to show us that. They'll give us that answer.
How much is the game in the college level predicated on emotion for these kids, whether it be good emotion or bad emotion? I see in the NFL it doesn't seem to be as much emotion-based, but more strategy and kind of a breakdown situation. At the college game, though, emotion and fire seems to be so much more a part of the equation.
I would agree with that. You have younger kids. You have anywhere from 22 to 18-year-old kids out there playing. So you have kids, emotion's a big part of it. In the NFL, you have guys who've done it. Like, London Fletcher was 35 years old when I was there. He'd played there for 14 years, hadn't missed a start for 200 games. That guy's not going to be riding a wave. An 18-year-old kid, a true freshman, even a senior who's 22, might be riding that wave a little bit more than a 35-year-old.
Adam, you were at practice today, and usually Tuesday is kind of your physical day. How would you compare what you saw on a typical Tuesday today versus maybe your days at Nebraska?
It's interesting because we were actually talking about this. It was interesting because I've heard that Callahan didn't practice hard. He must have changed how he practiced after I left. Because we would do practices, and then we would do like an hour and a half scrimmage, and it wasn't planned, and it was intense. When I was there, it was almost too much. I never had another coach do it. So he must have changed it. And I'm not really advocating for that. But it's
one
of those.
It didn't work, Adam.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
He did, and it didn't work.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
2007, we were like, we didn't practice. It was great, but we lost a lot of games.
Yeah, it wasn't quite effective. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So you got to find that fine line, you know what I mean? I mean, it was a little bit physical. It could have been more physical, but at the same time, if you got guys that are dinged up, you got to kind of protect them as well.
Ohio State coming to town. We've talked about the bigness of this game from the standpoint of last year, from the standpoint of national reputation and everything else. When you go up against a team that on paper is further advanced in their program and probably, if you believe Sean's recruiting rankings, probably has
always.
Every minute of the day. I know you were on Rivals nonstop. but if you believe that, they've certainly out-recruited Nebraska over the last several years. How do you counter a talent gap in a game?
Look at what Wisconsin just did. If you believe his rankings, I do, obviously.
They're not my rankings.
It's Sean's fault, everybody. Just remember, it's all Sean.
They're like my Bible, you know what I'm saying? Look at Wisconsin. We beat them in the rankings consistently, yet look what happens on the field consistently. They have a system. They have an identity. They recruit. They develop for that system. So that's what Nebraska needs to start doing. And it's great to get the talent in. Obviously, that's phenomenal. But you got to have that identity, build it, and build around it, and move going forward. And that's how you close that gap.
How big will ball control be this week if Nebraska wants to have a chance to have some kind of longer drives that eat up some clock?
That would absolutely help. I would argue, though, if you're going to get an 80-yard touchdown pass, you're going to take that. To me, it's about we have to win the turnover battle. Mm-hmm. If each team gets 10 possessions in a game and all of a sudden you're down two, you lose a turnover battle by two. If Ohio State has 12 possessions, we have 8, good luck. Same thing with penalty yards. If we have 50, 75 more penalty yards, that's almost another full football field. We have to go more than special teams. Getting the ball on the 10 versus the 30, that's two more or less first downs you have to get. Those hidden yardage scenarios are where I think they're going to be the big impact in the game.
Big picture, Adam, you got an athletic director that is gone after an early season loss against a MAC team. You have a big loss at home and under the lights without that AD. What type of pressure is on this coaching staff? What does a season look like where we're looking at the same staff a year from now across the board? Or are we looking at something fresh? Like, what's the difference there? Or is there anything that can happen this year that would stop a big shift from happening?
I think there's Husker Nation's kind of split. Some of them are ready to move on. Some of them are like, give them more time. I think these last six games is huge. I think what happens against Ohio State, Penn State, Iowa, you got Minnesota, you have these other games. It's going to be huge. If they don't do very well and a certain guy down southern Florida continues to do well, it's kind of like if you have a girlfriend you're not crazy about, you might tolerate her. Unless there's a really good-looking one over there that likes you back. It's a lot easier to let this one go and go get that one. So there might, obviously a lot of it's on Mike, but some of it depends on what happens elsewhere.
If you're like me and you find one good-looking girl who ever liked you and everybody else ignored you, you marry that one and you just be happy that you stayed there.
Look at you.
Yeah, that's the only chance I had. I had to grab the one. Bruce in Sydney says there's one glaring factor about the Nebraska defense: poor tackling. There are too many missed tackles, and why are our defenders consistently making tackles above the waist? I've been told the coaching staff avoids much emphasis on proper tackling techniques for fear of injury. Football has changed some in practices, I know, even from your day, Adam, as far as how much live tackling you do in practice. Overall, across the board, as you watch football, is tackling still a problem in this game? Is it less successful than it was?
I think there's a couple of things that play a factor. Number one, there's no more. There was two-a-days, then it went 2-1, 2-1. Now you have no more two-a-days, NFL, college across the board. Also, you've got guys, everyone wants to be that meme on Twitter or Facebook. They want to be the highlight on SportsCenter. So tackling is great, but they want to be that speeding bullet that's on the SportsCenter top 10. So the form tackling is not always taught as much anymore. Plus, you don't practice it as much anymore, just through less practices.
From Scott in Elkhorn: I just don't really care about Nebraska football anymore. The program's been run into the ground. I've watched Carriker Chronicles. I know that's not the case for you.
No, I will always care about Nebraska football. What was his name?
Scott.
Don't give up, man. Don't go anywhere. Stay with us. No matter what happens, always, always represent Nebraska football.
Michael says, if the coaches and players want to prove critics wrong, don't you think this is the game to do it against Ohio State?
Yeah, this would be a big game to do it. Same with Penn State and Iowa. Those games are going to stick out. Those games are going to be huge, in my opinion. And that's not a secret to anybody, I don't think.
I'm gonna just piggyback. What's the game plan? I mean, we're not going to plan the game, but I would like to. I would like to try and find a way right now, Adam. If the coaches, they watch every Tuesday.
I'm sure they do. They're taking notes right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Welcome.
For short yardage.
Yeah, you're welcome, guys.
No, but I mean, what is the game plan? JT Barrett has been there for since you and I played, right?
So like, feels like.
Yeah, doesn't it? But what is it to stop? What is there a shift? Is there a change? Is just play better, or is there a scheme that you haven't seen from this defense that will stop an Ohio State offense?
Like I said, I thought they played really well for 2.5 quarters.
Right.
You could say finish strong. Yeah. You could say maybe rotate guys throughout the game because they did look tired in that fourth quarter. They played well. Play four full quarters, and you have to against Ohio State. That's no secret.
Adam Carriker. Carriker Chronicles, you can watch it. It's a wonderful, fun video that pops up almost daily, it seems.
Monday through Friday, 8 a.m.
There it is on the Omaha World Herald website at omaha.com. Adam, great to have you on the show. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, Adam. Appreciate it.
We have a winner in our game day photo contest. Willie Purvis sent in this photo of some fans meeting members of the 1997 championship team that was celebrated during the game on Saturday. That was a fantastic atmosphere and a chance to hang out with the Sears Trophy, or I guess the Amway Trophy now. It was the Sears Trophy back then when Nebraska was winning those championships. Make sure to send in your best game day photos each week for a chance to win the Big Red Wrap-Up Coffee Tumbler, the T-shirt, and the DVD copy of the new NET program, Tom Osborne, A Legacy Beyond the Game. Well, up next on the Wrap-Up, Sean Callahan and I will talk Nebraska's big recruiting weekend last Saturday. But as we go to break, one last look from Saturday, courtesy of Aaron Babcock from Hale Varsity Magazine. We're back in just a moment. to Big Red Wrap-Up. Be sure to vote on this week's sideline survey question. After six games, which unit needs the most improvement? And all of them has jumped up to 77%. Go to the website. It's the Wrap-Up website. And cast your vote. Thanks for joining us tonight on Big Red Wrap-Up. I'm here with Sean Callahan. We talk a little bit of recruiting. This was one of the two weekends this past weekend that Nebraska really eyed on the calendar once the Ohio State game became a night game. That became another big one. What did we see this past weekend as far as recruiting?
Well, 11 official visitors in town this weekend for Nebraska, highlighted by Micah Parsons, Bookie Radley Hiles from IMG Academy. You know, as far as a visitor list, this is about as good as you're going to see at a home game for Nebraska. And they really went all out. I think Nebraska wanted a night game to get these guys all in. I thought it was also interesting the involvement that President Hank Bounds had on the weekend. He had all 11 of the official visitors, their families, the entire coaching staff, and their families and children at his house for the big Sunday brunch. They usually have it at a restaurant at Lincoln. Bounds, President Bounds, hosted everybody at his house. So in a lot of ways, he really has been an acting athletic director with some of the things he's been doing, especially in football recruiting.
Is that done to assure these families about something one way or the other? Because every one of them had to come in with questions about what's going on here.
Right, and I think he is at least a voice that can answer those tough questions. And there aren't that many voices that can, because there are some tough questions right now about the future and the direction of things. And Hank Bounds will have a very strong voice, if not the strongest voice, in who the next athletic director is and kind of what direction things are going to go. So, you know, he spends as much time with the recruits as anyone down there in the pregame, and obviously having everyone at his house on Sunday, which I thought was a really interesting development.
Another big weekend this weekend for Nebraska?
You know, it's potentially going to be big. You know, right now, I think two or three officials confirmed that number could grow. Mm-hmm. It just depends on kind of what Nebraska wants to do. As you can see, the two guys coming in, Cade Bredesford, a big offensive line target for Nebraska, a tackle. And then they'll have, you know, one of the top players in the country out of Oregon coming in as well, a Corvallis, Oregon prospect that Nebraska is recruiting on defense. So it's going to be a huge weekend with those two guys here. And I think there's going to be some unofficials. Max Duggan's going to be here. Marcus Hicks out of Wichita. He's a top 2019, probably a four-star defensive end for 2019 out of Wichita.
Speaking of 2019, let's welcome in one of the commits in that 2019 class as we go to Scott's Bluff and check in with Garrett Nelson. Garrett, how are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing great. Just got out of film, and we're going to grab a shower and head home and eat some dinner.
Well, I appreciate you joining us on TV unshowered. Thank you for the time tonight. Yeah. It's good to have you. Walk us through what you were watching film right now. What are you looking at, and how can you get better as your season goes along?
We're watching film on the Sydney York game, and we were, you know, as you do in film, analyzing where they're going to line up on offense and if they shift the motions and things like that. And this is a big week for us. Coach Benson, our head coach, always circles Grand Island Northwest, McCook, and Sydney on his calendar because these are big games for us to get, you know, a home playoff game and not have to travel, you know, down where you guys are at eight hours away for a first round playoff game. And, you know, it'd be nice to play at home first round. But yeah, you know, just studying, getting better, and definitely, you know, learning more technique as I go on, developing my skills as a high school player before I go and become a Husker.
Garrett, you came to Nebraska's camp in June, relatively unknown, I think, by most of the Husker coaches. It was a Friday morning. They kind of all watched you. By Friday night, you had an offer. By the next Friday, you were tearing up, crying, hugging the coaches, and you committed to the Huskers. Just run through that whole timeline now that you've had a chance to kind of look at how it all played out and how much it really meant to you to get this opportunity to commit to Nebraska.
It you know, reflecting back on it now, it definitely was a long, hard spring and summer training, 2 or 3 hours a day, two to three times a day for 6 to 7 days a week, and, you know, putting all that time and effort in for 8 to 9 months, you know, it definitely pays off. And reflecting back on that on that Friday and getting that offer that night and committing the next week is, yeah, it's definitely, you know, things happen for a reason. Just like with the amount of recruits that came in this weekend and how close everybody is already. You know, I met some of those guys for the first time down there in the Wisconsin game, and, you know, we're already texting, and, you know, we becoming friends, just super comfortable around those guys, and some are commit, some are just visiting. So, you know, hopefully those friendships that I built and the other guys built with them, you know, carries over into college, and hopefully you get some more commits that feel that they are familiar with that college and they want to be a black shirt, they want to play for Nebraska on the offense, and you know, rebuilding the domination of black shirts, you know, having that close net of guys on the defense and absolutely dominating opponents, and you know, having other teams fear what we're going to do, and that's a huge thing that I want to do. And Coach Yako laid some heavy stuff on me after Wisconsin game, and you know, taking that on as a man and completing that journey with my team and the other guys around me on that defense is going to be probably the biggest goal in my life to do right now. And it's besides just completing high school and, you know, getting that degree, it's just I've been thinking about that a lot since he laid that on me, and it definitely is a top priority for me right now.
Garrett Nelson from Scottsbluff High School. Garrett, good luck the rest of the season. We really appreciate you taking a couple of minutes for us, and tell Coach Benson we said hello, would you?
Yes, sir, definitely. Yeah, have a good night, guys. God bless.
Thank you, Garrett. Appreciate it. Boy, what a fun guy that's going to be
Garrett
to cover.
I love Garrett Nelson. I mean, he plays with his hair on fire, and it means a lot to him to be a Husker. And you don't see that with kids. When he committed, he was crying. He was hugging his family. And you just don't see that with kids around the state as much as we used to in our era growing up in the 80s and 90s. So he's a throwback in a lot of ways.
Well, and he'll certainly be a nice fit for Nebraska. Let's stay in state and talk about Justin Holm from Cambridge High School.
Lincoln Southwest. Yeah, Lincoln Southwest. Justin Holm, another guy that came to Nebraska's Friday Night Lights camp, had an under-the-radar junior season. He is one of the top receivers in the state as a senior. He committed to walk on in June, kind of wants to go the Brandon Riley, Brian Reimers, you know, route as the next kind of local guy that's going to play. And I do think he is set up to play here because he's a big body guy at 6'6". He just needs some time to develop. And he jumped on that walk-on offer immediately because I think he has seen what guys like Brandon Riley have done and what others. And even though he's not a commit as like an actual scholarship guy, he feels like he's already a part of this class. I know he talks to the regular commits regularly. He's down at every game, and I'm excited about him. I think he's a great early walk-on addition they added in June.
All right, Sean, thanks very much. What's the hardest part about being an offensive lineman? We asked that and more to junior Gerald Foster in this latest Huskers Up Close feature.
Hardest thing about being an offensive lineman, people's guess would be that you don't get to score and things like that, but I really don't know how much better it is than, you know, manhandling somebody and being able to actually force them to go where you tell them to go. Another 300-pound guy, you're just grabbing him, throwing him into the end zone, your back walks in with no problem. I don't know a better feeling than that, but it's all about understanding what your role is and understanding what the technique and the way that you need to put your hands on the guy, the way you need to move your feet to be able to get your job done. One thing people may not know about me, I don't know, I like to draw when I get a chance. Drawing is one of my big hobbies, that and doing, you know, craftsmanship, things that I get to work with my hands. I built a bar this summer, did that, and that was a whole lot of fun. So whatever I get to do that's, you know, something where I get to make or create, it's a whole lot of fun for me. When we moved up here when I was younger, we definitely adapted to, you know, the culture, to how much love that everybody has for the university and the respect that everybody has for the university. So I was really happy to be able to have the chance to come out and be able to be a part of something bigger than myself. And then to learn about the history that comes with being on the offensive line, learn about, you know, what exactly it's all about and all the people that are looking forward to seeing what we can bring to the table. It's just great, and it's a great blessing to have, and I'm happy to be able to be out here.
Going to be a tough task for Gerald Foster and his offensive line mates this week because Ohio State comes to town. And you can throw a few teams in the conversation across college football as the best defensive line. You could talk Alabama. You could look at Clemson, certainly. But Ohio State is right in the mix. And they may be, Sean, the deepest defensive line in college football. They're going to rotate guys all game long. They'll bring a guy off the bench named Chase Young, who is a freshman, who is phenomenal. And
Nick Bosa
coming off the line. They come at you in waves. And Greg Schiano, the defensive coordinator, former coach at Rutgers, does a fantastic job in rotating the guys through, so they're always fresh.
Well, I don't know if you heard this quote from Schiano, but he said this is the best defensive line he's coached at all levels, including his time as the head coach with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So
I believe it. I mean, it's a daunting task. And if you're Nebraska and you want to establish the run, you're going to watch that Maryland tape from last week when Maryland was not able to crack 100 yards of total offense against Ohio State. And you're going to be thinking, what do we have to do to move the ball a little bit? Now, it was mentioned that they were not great in the first couple of weeks past defense. And they've not really been tested since the Oklahoma game by anybody who can significantly move it up and down the field from a passing standpoint.
Guys, that puts a lot of pressure on Tanner Lee, who has improved. He had a fluke interception for the pick six in this week's game, but it puts a lot of pressure on a guy that when under pressure tends to force throws, and when you don't need to blitz, you got a lot of guys in coverage. It's going to just, the routes have to be right, they have to be crisp, and Tanner's got to throw the ball away or hit the check down. You still have yet to see him hit the check down. We saw him throw the ball out away a little bit. He even took off running on Saturday against Wisconsin, did a little slide. That's got to happen. He's going to be scrambling, maybe get to the pocket a little bit more, but a lot of pressure, and when Tanner's under pressure, he likes to force it.
They need to win on some early downs with the run game, too. I mean, that they're too inconsistent. Danny Langsdorf talked about that. They'll get 10 or 12, but then they'll get 0, 1, or 2 on a lot of other carries. So the middle needs to be more in that 4 or 5 range, and they just haven't really consistently done that on the ground.
Buckeye offense, JT Barrett, J.K. Dobbins, Paris Campbell, fantastic not only on offense, but can hurt you in special teams. There's not a lot of weaknesses with this Ohio State team. It's probably not the team you would have chosen to have on your schedule right after a physical game with Wisconsin.
No, it's not, because Ohio State plays a physical brand of football as well. They may spread you out a little bit. They got a running quarterback, but make no doubt about it, they're going to come straight at you, and they've got the talent that can win the one-on-one battles. And that's what I think is important to understand about this Big Ten type of brand of football is when it comes down to simple offenses, it's one-to-one battles. That talent has to match up. You got to play the game. And Ohio State, they've got that edge right now.
Kevin Wilson, their new offensive coordinator. You think about that. Schiano, Wilson. I mean, that's an all-star staff of coaches they've put together out there.
No question. Don't forget to head to our website. Click on the prediction. Blake, Sean, and I will tell you exactly what to expect on Saturday night as the Huskers look to rebound, welcoming the Ohio State Buckeyes to Memorial Stadium. Kickoff scheduled 6:30 p.m. Central on FS1. We'll be back next week to break down that game. Our guest co-host is Damon Benning. Our special guest, former Husker Jason Peter. The censors are preparing for a very busy night. Our thanks to Adam Carricker tonight for joining us, Garrett Nelson, Ron and the boys in the call center. For Blake Lawrence and Sean Callahan, I'm Kevin Kugler. We'll see you next week. And you know where we'll see you? Right here on NET's Big Red Wrap-Up. So long.